free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, April the 17th, 2020. Have you been infected with truth? Are you suffering from independent thinking? Well, we've got a cure for that now. If you are thinking for yourself, you might have a disease, and we've got the social media companies now have a remedy for that. As a matter of fact, they're telling everybody, look, there's a scam that's going around. Not the Facebook, YouTube, Google scam. This is another scam. Police are warning people that, and this is in Maine, Thomaston, Maine. They said the police department in Maine is alerting cell phone users that they're getting text messages about a COVID-19 scam. I've seen nothing but messages on my phone and news sites about an alleged COVID-19 epidemic. I've seen that scam. No, this is something different. So someone who came in contact with you tested positive or has shown symptoms of COVID-19 and recommends that you self-isolate and that you get tested. I looked at that and I thought, wait a minute. That looks suspiciously like what Fauci is saying. What is the area code on this number? Is this a Washington, D.C. area code? No, it's actually coming from an Indiana area code. But that doesn't mean that Fauci couldn't have a cell phone from Indiana doing this kind of stuff. Or that he couldn't have set some people up to do that. Look, this scam that is being played on people is verbatim what these scammers in the CDC and the NIH are doing to you. You better wake up, wise up to this. Yeah, they said, we asked the public, don't click on this. Yeah, don't buy into this scamdemic. I'm going to tell you why it's a scam. I mean, as I've said before, we've had a decades-old con game being run by the UN and their IPCC. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. They had their models. They had their data. Their models had bad assumptions. But, you know, even if you've got a good model with good assumptions, if you put garbage into it, you get garbage out. Now, if you've got a bad model and you want to sell an agenda, one of the things that you do is we saw with ClimateGate 1 and ClimateGate 2, we had two different dumps of emails between these quote-unquote scientists, bureaucrats looking for research grants, bureaucrats doing the work of the UN, pushing their agenda, saying, hey, our projections are not matching up. You know that exponential ramp that was going up, that giant curve, that hockey stick? Well, it didn't happen. So we've got to hide the decline. How are we going to do this, guys? Well, let's talk about how we could, quote unquote, adjust the data. And now that's exactly what the CDC is doing. Even as we go through with this, even though it's not decades, all right, it took decades for us to see that. But during those decades, they were building their plans of what they were going to do, screaming at the top of their lungs, just as you've seen AOC, we're all going to die. There's no future. We're all going to die. And then what they did was they kept all the quote-unquote solutions, and they removed the climate change reason, and they stuck in their COVID-19 projections, their models, their data, which they didn't have any. And we're all going to die. Scream, we're all going to die. And then they applied these same predictions. And so if somebody tells you that you've come in contact with them, you may have come in contact with them, or you will if you don't stay locked down. You self-isolate. You better get tested. Oh, and here's what's going to happen when you get tested. You are going to be experiencing the next step in this, which is complete isolation. They're not just going to put you under house arrest. They're talking about solitary confinement, folks. All right, we've got an interesting show today. We're going to be talking to Richard Proctor about the Constitution, and we'll be talking to Matt Shea, the politician in Washington State, state representative, at the center of the civil disobedience that is rising up to challenge this tyranny. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, April 17th, year of our Lord, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. Today we're going to talk about the Constitution. Tenth Amendment is now a thing with the left, since President Trump said, I have total authority. And of course, when he answered one question, first he was saying, well, I'll let the, after everybody called him on that, from Republicans to Democrats to people like Jonathan Turley, who had defended him against these ridiculous impeachment charges and these previous attempts to take out President Trump, as I have. Those previous attempts to take him out were ridiculous. But now we got somebody that is behind him, and he's essentially put Fauci in charge, and he's taking out the country. And I guess perhaps it's Fauci that has total authority over the country. Because when President Trump was talking about it, as I played the press clip on Tuesday, I get people on Twitter all the time saying, Trump's not doing this. Trump's not. Well, yeah, he is. He is doing it. He says, I will decide when we're going to open up the country. And even in the press conference on Tuesday, he said, well, you know, we'll let the governors do it and so forth. But, you know, if they've got a lot of cases there, we won't let them. We won't let them. So, okay, so you're going to keep the country locked down. As I said before, recommendations equals guidelines equals orders. Everybody knows this. You're not going to have a declaration of martial law. You're not going to have formal executive orders because people call them out on that, challenge them in court. They're going to do things in a underhanded way. They're not going to have the integrity to take over our country. But make no mistake about it, the people who have taken over our country are FEMA and CDC. And they're the ones writing the guidelines for when and how we're going to be able to open up. And let me tell you what's coming. It's going to be a digital gulag for you. A digital gulag. Which is what they always planned with the UN 2030 agenda in smart cities. A digital gulag. And Fauci, as he's talking about, well, you know, don't touch people. Don't get close to people. Don't shake hands. It was interesting the other day. He actually said, well, Tinder? Is Tinder? Somebody asked him. Because, you know, he's now the president. He's doing the press conferences as well, for the most part. And so, you know, if you want to know when we're going to be able to open up, the president has given that power and the podium to Fauci. So they asked Fauci, well, what about Tinder dates? Can I do Tinder date, you know, online dating service? And he said, well, if you want to take the risk. And it's like, well, thank you. Thank you. He's actually allowed us the freedom to take the risk to date. That's amazing. You know, it's kind of like when Pence was talking about spring break. You know, well, I don't know about spring break. It's like, hey, you should have complained. If you don't want people to go on spring break, and all these people in the press talking about spring break, you might want to consider all the college kids who got various other venereal diseases on spring break. I think the chances of that are much higher. That and, death by drunken driving and so forth. I mean, it's like, seriously, there's absolutely no context for risk. But as I was saying at the top of the hour, we've got this story coming out of Maine. The police are saying people are sending out hoaxes to you, to cell phone users, telling them that they've been in contact with somebody who tested positive or who's shown symptoms, and they recommend you self-isolate or you get tested. Let me tell you, this right now may be a hoax, but that's exactly what it's going to look like in this digital gulag. Because you've got Google and Apple already coming together to spy on you with your phone and to surveil everybody and to flag you as a suspect. A suspected infected, which means that you're a terrorist. Yeah, we're going to roll out TSA everywhere. As President Trump was saying also in that press conference, well, I want the governors to seriously consider testing people who are coming into their state and leaving their state. Will that become a guideline, a recommendation, a de facto executive order for all the governors to do that? Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. Anyway, as they point out, do not click on this link. In other words, don't buy into this nonsense. Don't buy into the tyranny. Don't buy into the statistics from the CDC. It's amazing to me to see people who should know better, who have in the past talked about freedom, who have in the past talked about the CDC lying to us about flu so that they could push a flu vaccine. This year, flu has just disappeared just a couple of weeks ago. As, interestingly enough, COVID-19 went straight up. And so did death from heart disease and from pneumonia and so forth. That, all of those three just plummeted as their statistics for COVID-19 went up. Is that suspicious? Well, it is if you're thinking. But don't think. Don't think about that. Yeah, the virus is not the only invisible enemy. Yeah, we've got a lot of invisible enemies. We have enemies of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness locking us down and destroying the Constitution. And they're using CDC lies to do it. It's absolutely amazing to me to see this go on. Facebook will now be directing users to the WHO if they believe that you've seen an article that Facebook believes is disinformation. If this article contradicts what CDC says or what the WHO says, they will send you directly to a video of Mike Adams. No, I'm sorry. They'll send you to the website for the CDC and for the WHO. Or same thing, essentially, right? And the propaganda has become really ham-fisted. I want to play for you something out of the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. It's a little guide for people. If you've got a relative who's actually read some of this information and talks to you, please don't engage them in a debate. You know, just say, whatever. Yes, it's a stressful time, isn't it? And do not listen to them. I do not see what you're saying. I will not listen to what you're saying. And don't engage them in a discussion because, you know, they might actually, that would be a very dangerous thing for you. Here's this clip, video clip number one.
What do you do when this happens? A loved one, let's say it's your dad, drops into the family group chat with something he thinks is real. It's something about China manufacturing the coronavirus. There's a link to a site you've never heard of with a message calling it scary stuff. So what do you do with this? Do you ignore it? Do you call him out saying how ridiculous you think this is?
If you do that to your dad, you've actually shamed him. My name is Claire Wardle and I'm the US Director of First Draft. And we are a nonprofit that we help people navigate the challenges of misinformation online.
Just ignore him.
What happens is that your dad doubles down on his view. And he dismisses what you're saying. Use language that's empathetic and to say we're all in this together. And rather than you're wrong, I'm right, here are the facts. Because that does not work.
So hold back on all that reactive talk. Maybe try something like this.
Reactive.
Yeah, these are scary times. We're all a bit afraid, but let's be careful. What you're sharing is inaccurate and it feeds into that fear we all feel.
Everybody's anxiety is so heightened right now. People are sharing this stuff not for any malicious reasons, but because they're scared too.
Sending more context could also be a good move, but don't drown them in evidence. Maybe send an article from a legitimate source, quoting credible scientists, on why the virus wasn't manufactured. Conspiracies can be just as infectious, just as dangerous as a virus, so you have to guard against them.
It's very easy to just mute your crazy high school friend on Facebook or to leave a WhatsApp group where people are sharing false information. But right now, I actually think there's kind of a responsibility on all of us to help people understand that sharing that kind of information is increasing the level of pollution.
Okay, there you go. You understand what this is all about, right? This is postmodernism. And these kids have been schooled in this. Don't get into debates about evidence and facts. Just say, you know, whatever. You've got a truth. I've got a truth. Let's all just get along, okay? Let's not get into any evidence. Just quote some authorities from the government, the appeal to authority. We need to go back and look at the fundamental tenets of the scientific method laid out by Francis Bacon. One of the four pitfalls is to say, well, I just trust the authorities. We'll be right back. Stay with me. Welcome back. You know, we have, I just played for you the discussion out of CBC. If you've got somebody giving you some, Uncle Bob calls you up or your dad or, you know, some other male, these progressive women's, you know, don't debate the facts with them. Don't get into a discussion on evidence. You know, say, oh, yes, difficult times we're living in now, isn't it? Whatever. And, you know, you go back and you look at the authorities, which has now become, they're getting very desperate about this narrative, folks. They were able to get out front and they were able to panic most of the people here in the United States with lies from the CDC, just as they've been panicking people like AOC, a small subset of the population, mostly younger, who've been propagandized in school to trust everything that the government tells them. And now people who have seen their lives suddenly shut down by Washington, by dictates from Washington. As many people pointed out, quarantine is for sick people. If you lock up healthy people, that's called tyranny. And we're going to have one of those people on today at the who is at the tip of the spear in terms of fighting back, Matt Shea, a state representative out of Washington State. He's going to be on with us. We're also going to be talking about the Constitution because you know what's going on here, folks? It's Constitution distancing. CNN says the social distancing deniers have arrived. This is a point at which people are waking up to this. They're realizing that these projections, that these models, that these statistics being used by the CDC are false. They realize that they have now been enslaved and that every day, even though even with cooked books, their narrative is going down. And yet the measures that they're putting out on everybody continue to go up and get more draconian by the day. And so, we've got Matt Shea coming up in the second hour. We have Richard Proctor coming up in the third hour. You know, we have a story at Infowars.com. A Facebook fact checker. And of course, Facebook, you know, if they look at this and they say, you have seen something that contradicts the official story. You know, don't go to an article about that third building that just collapsed in its own footprint without even being hit by a plane. Three buildings collapsed in 9/11, New York City. Only two of them were hit by a plane. It's pretty ridiculous to believe that those two buildings collapsed after being hit by a plane. But if you believe the third building collapsed that wasn't even hit by a plane and that it was announced 20 minutes before it collapsed that it had already collapsed, you know, you need to be sent to remedial education, says Facebook. And one of the places that they will send you, one of the people that is working on this, as we pointed out at Infowars.com, this is a bombshell article, folks. Facebook fact checker, quote unquote, worked at the Wuhan Biolab. And she has now ruled out any virus leak with all of her debunking articles. Yeah, she has ruled out that it may have leaked from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. But she does have something of a conflict of interest, actually a giant conflict of interest. Danielle Anderson, who works at Duke University's NUS Medical School Lab in Singapore, also contributes to Science Feedback, which Facebook has been using to slap false information labels on articles claiming that COVID-19 may have originated in the Wuhan Institute, where she worked with bat coronavirus. That's right. That's right. Another interesting connection there to North Carolina as well, because, you know, you had the bat coronavirus was being worked on at UNC Chapel Hill. Duke is right there at Durham. I got three universities right there. That's where they set up Research Triangle Park, which is where I worked. They decided they would make a triangle out of the three universities and try to set up a research park. So we're just waiting to see who at NC State is involved in bat coronavirus, and then it'll all be complete. They call it, that instead of the Research Triangle Park, we could call it the Devil's Triangle Park. yeah, it's pretty amazing. But let's take a look at some of the numbers here, you know, and then we'll get into the government cheese checks and the scandal that is coming out of that. You know, Steve Mnuchin says, it's taking us a while to get out those $1,200 checks, but, and the reporter says, is that something that is going to work? Oh yeah, I think people, that'll last people for like 10 or 12 weeks. It's like, are you kidding me? $1,200? That's going to tide us over for 10 or 12 weeks? What world is this guy coming from? I pointed out, I said, you know, I think this is a guy, Steve Mnuchin, who you saw a picture of him and his glamorous wife there, the treasury, the big stacks of bills. You know, she was dressed to the nines. I said, I think Steve Mnuchin uses $1,000 bills instead of the toilet paper that we're all fighting for over at Costco. I think he uses it, I think he is feeding you a load of used toilet paper in this. Yeah, there they are. Yeah. So if you get $1,200, that'll tide you over. I don't think $1,200 would tie Mnuchin and his wife over for half a day with the lifestyle that they live. But we'll get into the government cheese checks that are in the mail, they say, and see what's happening with it. You know where that phrase comes from? Many of you may not know. I'm so old, I remember the Reagan administration. I've got many people in the audience who don't remember the Reagan administration, who weren't even born during the Reagan administration. But Reagan set up a government cheese program with a commodity credit system. They were creating, putting out processed cheese. They were handing that out to people who were welfare and food stamp recipients. And it became something of a joke. But now it's not a joke because now everybody's got to beg for their government cheese. There he is. Yeah, Reagan with the cheese. And, you know, President Trump's got a cheese check on the way. When we look at what's happening, though, folks, you know, you see red listed up at the top of the Drudge Report. 33,000 people die. Well, that's by definition of a coronavirus death. That is a new definition of the coronavirus death from the CDC. They're constantly adjusting these numbers. You know, there's some other statistics that are constantly adjusted by the Labor Department. The Labor Department will tell us that we've got 22 million people who have filed jobless claims. And then the CDC will tell us that we've got 33,000 people who have died from coronavirus. Now, here's what you need to understand. This is not about a trade-off between life and money, right? You can't value people's lives. You can't put a price tag on somebody's life. This is not even about young versus old. This is really about dueling statistics from government agencies. You see, the Department of Labor is notorious for always underestimating unemployment. And the CDC has for decades been famous for overestimating flu deaths. So when we come back, we're going to take a look at the numbers. We're going to take a skeptical look at government statistics. I'm not somebody like Mike Adams who's going to pull up a chart from the CDC and tell you to believe it. I'm going to tell you don't believe anything you see from these people. And I'll tell you why when we come back. Stay with us.
Analyzing the globalist's next move. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Let's take a look at the statistics. And again, we're not contrasting money to lives. But of course, the economic shutdown is going to cost lives. People will commit suicide out of depression, of lost jobs. What do you think was the cause of stockbrokers jumping out of the windows in the 1929 stock market crash, or many, many other suicides that happened as the depression stretched out for more than a decade, for almost two decades, quite frankly, because we really didn't start pulling out until we got into World War II in a big way in 1941. 1942 was when it finally got pulled out. And that was 13 years later. So, people, as Gerald Celente says, when people lose everything, they lose it. But this is not really still about life versus money or about old people versus young people when we start to look at these statistics. I just want to look at these statistics that have been fed to us and how they've typically been fed to us by the CDC and by the Department of Labor. Because now everybody is trying to get a handle on what is happening with this trade-off. Well, part of it is a trade-off of these agencies and the way they report information. Understand, first of all, when we look at the unemployment figures, the unemployment figures now are 22 million, and the CDC has put the number of deaths at 33,000. More people are dying from coronavirus than from heart attacks and from flu and from pneumonia and from a lot of other causes, right? According to the CDC. Do you really believe that? We're going to do a sanity check on that here in just a second. Yes, that's officially what they're saying, believe it or not. This is a Ripley statistic. I do not believe it. We have the U.S. Department of Labor has reported that 5.25 million more Americans filed first-time claims for unemployment last week. Now, we have seen in the past, the last time they did this, they said, look at the number of unemployed, and the highest number of unemployment claims have come from Pennsylvania, about 300,000, they said, out of the state of Pennsylvania. And yet, at the same time, right about that same time or just prior to it, people in California said, well, we're well over 1 million already and counting that we have shut down. And they might know that since it's the governments that are telling people you can't work. It's the governments that are shutting down restaurants and all these other small businesses and all the people who work for them. As I pointed out before, on March the 17th, my wife and I went to a restaurant for lunch. And she texted me and said, hurry up and get here. I'm holding a table, but they're shutting down the restaurant because the mayor of Austin has demanded it. And they gave him an hour's notice. And so she got there just before it was to take effect. And we were about the only people in the restaurant. The waitress was there. She was about to cry. She said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have a job now. Thank you, Marxist Mayor Adler here in Austin. So what has happened is, and we saw these reports, the state unemployment sites were crashing consistently. They couldn't keep up. And I don't know if they're able to keep up now or not. But the reality is that these things haven't been fully counted for a very long time, the way the Department of Labor counts unemployment. As the article points out from Reuters, they say this brings a total rise in U.S. unemployment over the past month to over 22 million. The previous record for initial jobless claims during the Great Recession, that was the one, 2008-2009, was below 700,000. So understand, we're talking about something that is over 30 times bigger than what we saw as the record during the Great Recession. Do you want something that's 30 times worse than that? Let's compare it to the Great Depression back in the 1930s. They said the U.S. unemployment has now surged to 16%, worse than during the financial crisis. Yes, much worse. As a matter of fact, it is Great Depression levels already. And the Great Depression, the unemployment figures were between 15 and 21%, with the exception of 1 year. It got up to 25%. We're at 16% now, which is typical Great Depression level unemployment. But there's something else going on. There is a common trick that has always been used by the Department of Labor to make the administration look better. And that's this administration, the Obama administration, all the Bush administration, they do it for every president. And what they will do is they'll come in with unemployment figures, and then they will say, here's the new unemployment figures for this quarter, and now we have adjusted down previous unemployment figures from the previous quarter to make this one look better. And then they will do the same thing the next quarter. Each quarter, they adjust the previous quarter to make this quarter look like unemployment is going down. In the week ending April 4th, more than 6 million claims were filed, which was a slight decrease from the previous week's record-breaking 6.8 million. See, they always do that. They always do. Now they're not doing it on a quarterly basis, but because things are moving so quickly into the Great Depression, they do it on a weekly basis. The assistant chair of finance at University of Notre Dame said it's akin to the entire country being hit by a hurricane. And as I pointed out this week, I said, no, it's actually more like a tornado. It came very quickly. The devastation was far more total. You just don't realize it yet. Most people haven't come out of their bunker where they're locked down to see the fact that their house has been swept away, like that family in Mississippi. When we look at the actual toll that this is going to take and how this is going to be much worse than people realize. Idaho Farm is now giving away potatoes. They're giving away potatoes in Idaho because they don't have any way to sell it. They're doing it for free so it wouldn't go to waste. Cranny Farms has thousands of potatoes that they were expecting to sell. Actually, it's quite a bit more than that. You look further down the article. The guy said, well, you know, we started out here with this pile. We had about 6,000 bags. So it's not thousands of potatoes. It is thousands of bags of potatoes, 6,000 bags, 100-pound bags. He said, I mean, there were several million individual potatoes is what the farmer says. Now, his family has been in this business. They've operated this farm for 113 years. 113 years. He said, I didn't really have a market for those potatoes. It's something that I would like to either, I was expecting to sell, but now I'm either going to have to dump it or put it into cattle feed. And so he called up people and said, hey, you can have this stuff for free. He said, there's been times where there are 20 or 30 cars there at a time. He says, I think the next several hours, most of that will be gone. 6,100-pound bags worth of potatoes. And it's going to be gone. And he said, people have visited us to pick up these potatoes for free from all over. He said, somebody came from Moscow, Idaho, which is kind of amusing to me. And so I looked this up, you know, where this guy is located. That's over an 8-hour drive. Somebody drove over 8 hours to get free potatoes. Now, does this make any sense to you? Doesn't make any sense to him, except that perhaps where they are, they can't get potatoes. You know, we're seeing all kinds of government-created shortages everywhere because they have busted the supply chain. That's why this guy can't sell these potatoes. There's nothing wrong with the potatoes. But he doesn't have any customers because the government, by fiat command, shut down his customers' businesses just like that. We've never seen anything like this in America. Are we going to put up with this? Do you realize how much worse this is? You know, I don't like to talk about the bioweapon aspect of this. I will talk about it because I think we need to be aware of the danger of these bioweapon labs. I've been talking about that for years, and I'll keep talking about it. And those bioweapon labs need to be shut down. But we shouldn't shut down our economy. This coronavirus, we now know, outside of the cooked books of the CDC, and even with their cooked books, it is very small compared to real epidemics. Very small. These numbers, 33,000 people died, totally devoid of any context, totally devoid of any skepticism about numbers that the CDC will rig in order to push their agenda for their agency and to push their agenda politically and to push America into poverty. It's absolutely amazing. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Working starts to make me wonder where fruits of what I do are growing. He says in love and war all is fair. He's got cards he ain't showing. How much does it cost? I'll buy it.
Well, you're not going to buy it if the government has shut down the businesses that sell it to you, right? The farmers aren't going to grow it if they can't sell it to those businesses. This is the problem. When you have people who have the arrogance to think that they can centrally plan the economy, let me just explain to you. Nobody is smart enough to do that. That's why I spent the time this week on iPencil. Go back and look at that video if you haven't. Go back and read the essay from Leonard Reed back in the 1950s, if you haven't seen that. Yeah, a pencil. Does anybody know how to make a pencil? Actually, no. And he goes into each and every one of the components, where they come from, who mines it, who processes it. It's not just the assembly of all these different things. He even talks about, well, you know, you got the equipment at the mill or at the place where they make the brass cap or whatever, and what went into all those machines and so forth. You understand there's a whole incredibly complex supply chain involved in making something as simple as a pencil. And that's why he picked a pencil. He said, I could have done something very complicated like a car. But you know, you look at a pencil, you think that's pretty simple. And the people in Washington think that our entire economy is simple enough that they can control it. But that is a fatal conceit of fools and tyrants. to do that type of thing. It destroys countries when you try to centrally play. We've seen this movie before. We saw it in Venezuela. But even more importantly, as I've pointed out many times, East and West Germany, North and South Korea, we have seen how you take a country, the same people with the same work ethic, the same essentially abilities, and you divide it in two and you put it under different economic systems, and what do you wind up with? You wind up with one of them in starvation and the other one prospering. We don't need to do that experiment again, do we? I mean, the experiment hasn't even ended in North and South Korea, but we have now turned the U.S. into North Korea. When I talked about the lady that got arrested in North Carolina, I said, you know, look at this. North Carolina has now become North Korea, where you got a police officer saying, I'm sorry, but your protests are now non-essential. I've declared that. You know, that's what happens in North Korea. Do not say anything, because then you will be made non-essential. But going back to the economics of this, right? Why is it that even the smartest people can't control the economy? It's not because of how smart they are. They just don't have enough information. It's an information problem. It's like I've given the analogy before of a neural network of computers, right? Each of those nodes is a very simple processor compared to a complex CPU. The CPU is much, much smarter than all those distributed processors, except that the processors are operating on information. They have a lot more information there. And so the problem is that no matter how smart the central planner thinks he is, he doesn't have the information to do it. Now, that's assuming that they are benevolent dictators. Most of these people who put themselves in this position don't really care about you or what happens to you. They're going to do things that empower themselves. And so when we look at what's happening, again, with this Idaho farmer here, he says, my product, he says, all the way from upscale restaurants to family sit-down diners, all that kind of stuff. He said, they're all just taking a total beating. Food service numbers are down. Restaurant business down maybe 80 to 85% in some places. If the pandemic conditions continue, there are millions of dollars of potatoes that will have a similar fate. They'll either be plowed under, dumped, they'll be used to feed livestock, or they'll be given away. He said, we've decided to cut back the number of acres for potatoes that we're planning for the 2020 year. I think the only thing worse than not planning is planning them and then not having a market for them. So do you understand what's happening here? He's being put out of business if he doesn't cut back his production, cut back his labor force. So all this stuff, just shutting down these restaurants by fiat, has now pushed its way back through the distribution chain to the farms themselves. We're seeing it in Idaho. We're seeing it in Florida, all these different places. And they're shutting down and they're not planting food. You're not going to have food because these people aren't planting it. So even if the geniuses in Washington, even if President Fauci tells Trump that Trump is allowed to open up the country, and they start working, you're still going to have this broken. Even if they open up one state here, one state there, even if they were to tell everybody, all right, everybody, munchkins, come out of your little huts now. It's all clear. Come out wherever you are. The good fairy goes around telling everybody the good news. Well, guess what? They didn't plan any food. Do you understand how bad this situation is? All the king's men aren't going to put Humpty to Dumpty together again. We've got the UN warning the economic downturn could kill hundreds of thousands of children in 2020. Now, that's true. Starvation kills. As I pointed out, the Great Leap Forward, you have probably four or five times the number of people that were killed in the 1918 flu, the one that the health tyrants, the dictators, our would-be dictators from the health, public health bureaucracies, they always refer to the 1918 flu epidemic. Well, that was the number that they come up with, that was a worldwide number, an estimate, really, because they didn't go around and test every single person. But that number is four to five times less than the number of people that were killed in just one communist country by a guy who wanted to establish his political power. And he starved them to death with the Great Leap Forward. Because, you know, Mao deliberately, perhaps, wanted the people to starve. He had to destroy the middle class. So he said, well, you're not going to have this position here. You are, let's see, you're a businessman or you work in a university or white collar job or something. I'm going to send you out to grow food. And even though he sent all these people out to grow food, they broke the food production system and people starved. Now, the way the UN is putting this, they're saying, oh, these kids are starving because they rely on government schools to be fed. And now they're going to have to look somewhere else. So they're always pushing a government agenda. It doesn't matter to them what the reason is. So when we look at this history of what will happen with us, just understand before we leave the unemployment figures, let's just go back and look at the classic way unemployment figures are calculated. They always understate them, and it's built into the system. Over the years, they have changed the way that they count unemployment. And that's one of the scary things, because when we start comparing the numbers, like I said, we're already in Great Depression range, even though they haven't fully processed all the people who are who have legitimate unemployment claims at the unemployment sites. The way that they count unemployment has been changed to make the government look better over the last 100 years. So even when we compare this back to the Great Depression, the Great Depression numbers were a lot more honest. What they're doing now, and this is how they understate the number of unemployed people. They do basically three things. You are unemployed if you do not have a job. Okay, well, that's what all of us think, right? You don't have a job, you're unemployed. But no, also they say you are actively looking for work in the last 4 weeks. So you have to be unemployed and looking for a job actively and be currently available for work. And that's the biggest part of that right now. Because, you know, when people stop looking for a job because they're discouraged, like, you know, when you have difficult economic times and people think, well, there's no jobs out there, so I'm not going to go look for a job. Well, now you're no longer unemployed. You see how they're going to use this to put a rosy spin on the Greater Depression here in the 21st century? They didn't do that in the Depression of the 20th century. And then they overstate the number of employed people. If you had a full-time job and that job gets cut and now you're working maybe 10 hours a week because that's the only work that you can get, you're still employed. Being underemployed doesn't matter. That doesn't count in there. So they overstate the number of people who are employed. And if you're discouraged because you can't find a job anywhere or because maybe, you know, a 10 hours at a minimum wage job is, you know, not something that you're interested in, you're discouraged. At that point, they kick you off of the rolls. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about how the CDC overstates these cases. So I just showed you how the Department of Labor understates unemployment. I'm going to tell you how they overstate the people who are dying from the disease. But, folks, the thing I'm concerned about are the long-term effects of this. I just talked about the potato farmer who said, hey, I just gave away a million potatoes, and I'm not going to spend the money and the time and the labor to plant more potatoes. You better start preparing long-term. And, you know, we have now, we're now taking orders for InfoWars storable food. Yes, it's a few weeks, the waiting list. You can take a look at the site, but that is worth getting on that list. Make sure that you have secured your source of food, because they have broken this system in ways that they don't fully understand, and we haven't really seen the impacts of this. Meat is getting scarce. All kinds of food are getting scarce. InfoWarsStore.com.
Analyzing the globalists' next move. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, this week I talked about Groundhog Day. I said, you know, when our government masters tell us that we can come out of hiding places, and you hear the voice of the good fairy in Oz saying, come out, little munchkins, wherever you are, will they come out? Will we be too afraid of our shadow because we've been listening to Fauci so much on a daily basis that we're afraid to come out? Well, that's a good question. And, you know, Michael Snyder, an article on Zero Hedge, will you resume normal daily activities once the COVID-19 restrictions are finally lifted? When asked how quickly they'll return to their normal activities once the government lifts restrictions on businesses and schools, things start to reopen. This is from the Gallup poll. A majority of Americans said that they would wait. They wait and see what happens. That was 71%. They're just going to stay in their little hobbit hole. Another 10% would wait indefinitely. Because, you know, hey, they got a government cheese check coming. Only 20% said that they would return to their normal activities immediately. I guess the problem is I just don't have a connection anymore to America. Because I never stopped working. I never went into hiding. I don't understand that. And I don't understand this whole subservience to the mandatory masks. One person sent me an email, said, do you think that this is just training for the mandatory vaccines? I said, that's precisely what it is. I've even said that. It is training. This is about submission training, just like the TSA. The TSA wasn't about protecting us from protecting airports and airplanes from terrorist attacks. They admitted that in documents at the same time they were threatening to shut down Texas because we had the Texas House say, you're not going to put your hands on our kids. Stop that. And they said, well, we're going to stop all flights coming in and out of Texas. And at the same time, in their internal documents, and we know this because in a lawsuit, they accidentally posted the unredacted documents that were part of that lawsuit. They accidentally posted the unredacted ones on pacer.gov where all the government lawsuits go up, and we could see what they didn't want us to see. And what they didn't want us to see was at the same time they're threatening to shut down Texas if we didn't let them molest our children. They said there is no threat anywhere in the United States that we know of against airplanes or airports. But they will continue with that because it is B.F. Skinner training. Don't want to wear a mask? Some grocery stores say customers will be asked to leave. This is the main reason, folks, why I'm preparing, my family is preparing, to not have to go to grocery stores. And the only thing that you can do to get your food then is you can either grow your food or you can buy it mail order. Now, you can buy it mail order from Amazon or you can buy it from InfoWarsStore.com and support free speech. You know, you can make Jeff Bezos richer. I think he made, what was it, $24 billion in the last month because everybody's buying everything on Amazon.com. But they're saying even after this all lifts, expect that you'll have to wear masks and gloves if you go out dining. Well, I guess I won't be going out dining then. I won't be going to the grocery store. I won't be going to the restaurant. I'm not going to wear mask and gloves when I eat. This is beyond freak out level. It's amazing to me how with virtually a monopoly on information that they have created through censorship and control of social media, they have been able to so gaslight the American public that you won't believe anything unless it is something on a printout sheet from the CDC. And even people in the alternative media are now pushing CDC facts. That's how bad the control of information has become. And of course, Cuomo is saying, he's going, once he lets you out of your little hobbit hole, you're going to have to wear a mask. And I want to just show you a little bit of this B-roll clip because this is the absurdity. Look at Taiwan as we're going to break this baseball game they had there. And they've got this little bunch of automated, trying to build up excitement because nobody is allowed to watch the game. It's like going to a Chuck E. Cheese parlor, and they're televising that. Do you realize they've only had 6 people die out of 24 million in Taiwan, and they have locked down the entire country? They won't let there be basketball games. Do you realize that that death rate is 25 millionths of a percent? 25 millionths of a percent?
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
You know, at the beginning of the week, we had a story at InfoWars.com that I referred to a couple of times, and it's worth referring to it again. Cuomo, in an interview with Rudy Giuliani last weekend, said that, you know, every coronavirus projection has been 100% wrong up to this point. I said, well, you know, it's almost right, but since this is Governor Cuomo, he's never right about anything. And he got that figure wrong as well. Because as I pointed out, their projections are anywhere from 200% to 4,000% wrong. The hospitalization rates, if you look at it on a state-by-state basis, the best they did in any particular state was to overestimate it by a factor of two, say that twice as many, that's 200%, twice as many hospital beds are going to be needed. In many states, it was as much as 10 times that they overstated. That's 1,000%. In Washington state, they overstated it by 1,000%. In Texas, they overstated it by 900%, nine times. They said, we're going to need nine times the number of beds that we've needed. And so their models are wrong. Their data is being fudged. We're talking about that coming up in this segment here. But in spite of the fact that they've been not 100% wrong, Governor Cuomo, they've been 200 to 1,000% wrong. As a matter of fact, when we talk about the ventilators, they were 4,000% wrong because they said we're going to need 40 times the number of ventilators that we actually needed. But as I showed you that picture of those robot fans, because, you know, no people are allowed to go to a baseball game in Taiwan. They said, well, we didn't have any fans, so we've got to have something to generate some excitement. So we'll have a robot fans and a robot van, like a Chuck E. Cheese thing. Oh, that's exciting, isn't it? Seriously? I don't know. You find that exciting? I find it unbelievably pathetic. And to put this in perspective, and let's understand what a rigged game this is. What a psyop this is. What a scam this is. What a plandemic this is. In Taiwan, where they have 24 million people, they have had 393 people that have had the virus. 393 out of 24 million. Are you kidding me? They've probably got more people. There's probably 30 or 40 different types of ways that you can die that are much riskier than that. That works out to be 1/1,000 of a percent. 1/1,000 of a percent. And then when you look at the number of people who have died, they've had 6 people who have died out of 24 million. And look at that. You've got baseball games being played and they don't allow anybody to go to the baseball games because 6 people died. Seriously. I mean, you can have an automobile accident where 6 people die. So are they going to take all of our cars? Of course they are. That's always been a part of the plan. And now they are enacting that plan pretty quickly. If we accept the premise that no risk whatsoever is acceptable, that we're not going to look at the denominator of 24 million people. We're only going to look at the fact that 6 people died doing fill in the blank. That means you're not going to be able to do anything. And that's exactly what they want. They want you locked down forever in your little digital gulag where you don't interact with anyone anywhere. Not at a baseball game, not at church, not at political rallies. You don't interact with anybody. They're even pushing out the idea, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the RSPCA, the British equivalent of the ASPCA here. Anyway, they were first. So people listening in England, I give you credit for being first. You set up that society first. But they're saying, be careful because we think that dogs may be spreading this. So they don't even want you to have the physical contact of a dog. They want you completely alone. You can have your robot cheerleaders, your robot bands, your sex robots, and then you've got your monitor there, and you're sitting there in solitary confinement under house arrest. That is the vision that they want for you. It's not good enough for you to even try to comply by going to a rally, as people did in Michigan, everybody staying in their cars with the windows rolled. Oh, this is dangerous. This is dangerous. Or people going to church and staying in their cars with the windows rolled up. That's too dangerous too, said the Kentucky governor and a Kentucky mayor. They want you under house arrest. And they've also said, hey, if we determine that somebody in the family has got COVID-19, we'll come in to your home and we'll take those people out. I don't know. They're going to take out the healthy people or the sick people. I don't know. Because, see, quarantine is what you do to sick people. Tyranny is what they're doing to everybody right now. And you've already had a case of a lady who worked at a hospital. I don't know if she's a staff or nurse or a doctor. But her ex-husband went to the judge and said, she's working at a hospital. She's exposed to the coronavirus. And so the judge says, yeah, she's exposed to the coronavirus, and there's no vaccine for the kid yet, so take the kid. And they took the kid. You're going to be isolated. They will use this to push their vaccine agenda. They will use this to push you into an isolated, solitary confinement digital gulag. And how are they lying to us about these statistics? Because the key thing about all of this, it all comes back to the numbers. That's how they freaked everybody out. Again, you look at the headline, the very top thing this morning on the Drudge Report, 33,000 people dead. Okay, 33,000 out of 330 million, first of all. Secondly, how do you define dead? How many people have died of all these other diseases? Well, they have, people have stopped having heart attacks, as I played for you the doctor's statement yesterday. He said, look at this, look at the death rates for heart attacks, plummeted. The death rates for flu plummeted. The death rates for pneumonia plummeted. Oh, but if you have coronavirus, we're going to presume that even if you have all these other issues, let's say that you got a heart disease and pneumonia from the flu, but we test you and you got coronavirus, we're going to say you died from coronavirus. They've been instructed, make that the underlying cause, always. Now they've been instructed to presume that if somebody has died, even if they have not been tested, write it down as COVID-19 being the underlying cause, even if you don't know they had it. Because, you know, we know that COVID-19 will make somebody who has heart disease or pneumonia, we know that that will make them die more quickly. So that's the real cause. And if they're dying from a heart attack or from pneumonia, then it was probably because of coronavirus, even if we don't know that it was even present. China has done the same thing. You know, in this particular case, China is following behind the CDC. China just upped their Wuhan death statistics by 50%. A 50% jump in one day. They had, this is a city, again, we're talking about Taiwan, Wuhan, the epicenter in China. 11 million people. And they just upped the death toll to 3,869. Now, that is still 0.035% of the people in Wuhan that died. Oh, well, So if you round that up, that's 0.04%. It's an order of magnitude lower than what we've been told is the number of people who die from the flu. But, of course, we don't really know that either because the number of people who die from the flu is estimated, just like the number of people who die from coronavirus is estimated. The number of cases of all these things are estimated in both ways as well because they're not testing everybody. And as I said, you die from heart attack, oh, it's probably the coronavirus that did it. Write that down. Do you really believe those numbers in this vast country called China, said President Trump, that they have a certain number of cases and a certain number of deaths? Does anybody really believe that? No, I don't believe that, President Trump. I said that from the very beginning. I said, I don't believe their numbers. They could be higher. They could be lower. I don't believe the Chinese government will ever tell us anything that is true. And you know what, President Trump? I have to ask you, do you really believe the numbers that Fauci is giving you? Do you really believe the numbers that the CDC is giving you? They have always lied. The federal bureaucracies are as big a liars as the Chinese are. Don't believe any of these people. None of them. None of them. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Set me free. Why don't you, babe?
Yeah, why don't you let me free? I'm ready to live my life. I want liberty. I want the pursuit of happiness. I want my Constitution Bill of Rights back. We're going to be talking to Matt Shea coming up in the next segment because he's working for that in Washington State. But, you know, we just had actor Brian Dennehy died at the age of 81, not from COVID-19. You know, people actually do die of things, other things like that. They die of natural age. And in this particular case, of old age, he died of natural causes. Brian Dennehy. There's a picture of what you probably remember him from, movies like Rambo, Tommy Boy and other things. I mean, he was a supporting actor that you saw all over the place in the 80s and 90s, now dead at 81. And, you know, we just had in the last couple of weeks, we had Kenny Rogers die. I think it was 82, 83. Bill Withers also in his 80s, did the song, Lean on Me, some other things like that. Both of them in their 80s, dying from natural causes. That kind of happens to us in the 80s. It's sad, but it's true, folks. You know, when we look at the statistics on this, one of the ways that they are misrepresenting the statistics, coronavirus patients over the age of 80 have a death rate of 15%. Yeah, okay, so everybody's dying with a death rate of 15%, right? No, actually, it's the people who are elderly, the over 85, according to the CDC. 22% of them, 22% of the deaths are people who are over the age of 85. Another 13.5% are people that are 75 to 84. Now, why is that important? Life expectancy in the United States, folks, is 78. So right there, you've got 35% of the deaths from coronavirus were people who were already at or above life expectancy in the United States. That's not even talking about any other comorbidity factors. Age is a morbidity factor for all of us. But I want to go to some reports from some of the quote-unquote authorities, because, you know, we're told at the very beginning of the program, if somebody says to you something about this virus, you just say, well, whatever, I'm not going to talk to you about evidence, I don't want to talk to you about math or statistical analysis, any of that kind of stuff, right? I don't want to hear from a virologist or an epidemiologist. Who wants to talk about that? You just say, well, you got your facts, I've got mine, whatever. And then you go back to an authoritative source, you know, like CNN. Well, let's go to something a little bit more authoritative and people who will give us a reason. I've got a guy, and I've talked about him before, Stanford University. He works, he's a professor of medicine at the biomedical data science. He works on epidemiology, you know, like epidemics. He studies epidemics. We've also got a report here from a guy who is a professor. He works for the Department of Biostatistics and Epidemiology. He also works for the Rockefeller University. And we've got another guy, also works at Stanford University, a professor of medicine and of economics. He's a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. And then we've got the former chief medical officer of Ontario. All these people are calling this out for fake statistics, telling people they've been gaslighted by the numbers coming out of these government agencies. Let's go to the first one. Video clip number 7. This is Professor John Ioannidis out of Stanford University, a epidemiologist. Go ahead.
I'm John Ioannidis. I'm a professor of medicine and of epidemiology and population health at Stanford University. I'm one of the two co-directors of the Meta-Research Innovation Center at Stanford, or Metrics. The WHO indeed released an estimate of a case fatality rate of 3.4%, which at the time of the release earlier in March, it was based on the number of people who had died as the numerator and the number of people who had documented infections as the denominator. This is a crude estimate, and it largely depends on our ability to capture infections that are in the denominator. The number of deaths hopefully is captured with more accuracy, even though even for that number there can be some debate, for example, whether these deaths are by SARS-CoV-2 or with SARS-CoV-2, or also whether some deaths are missed or whether some people who are infected now may die later and we have not captured these deaths yet. But the bigger uncertainty is about the denominator, because based on what we know now, many people who are infected with this coronavirus, they present with very little, either no symptoms or mild, moderate symptoms that are very difficult to distinguish from the common cold and common flu. And many of them apparently would not present for asking for health care and for being tested. So what we know is just the tip of the iceberg. And information from settings where we have more complete information about that denominator suggests that the infection fatality rate is much, much lower than 3.4%. It is actually probably much lower compared to the 0.9% that is the main figure that went into some influential calculations by a wonderful team of researchers in Imperial College, which probably overestimated the exact infection fatality risk.
Okay, now I've read op-ed pieces from that same professor one of the things that he said at the beginning of this, he said, if you look at the models coming out of the University of Washington and Professor Murphy that were there, this is a university that's funded by Bill Gates, by the way. Big contributions there because, you know, Bill Gates is up in that area. Nothing to see there. Move on, right? Nevertheless, what they did was they came up with a model that really wasn't a bell-shaped curve. Now, the model that he referred to in London, that was a bell-shaped curve because they've always known since the 1840s that these epidemics typically follow a bell-shaped curve. But the model that was being used in the Washington University projections, Professor Ioannidis called them out and said, they've got a situation where you're passing this on. Every person who gets infected passes this on to 2.3 other people forever and ever. He goes, that never happens with anything. That's never happened before. It's not going to happen with this, and it's not happened with this either. I want to play for you in the amount of time that we've got left, as much as we can get from another professor of medicine. He is also a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Let's go ahead and play video clip number 8.
The measured case fatality rate.
All right, the measured case fatality rate.
Right. And the problem is that denominator does not count the people who got infected and were recovered.
All right. Two quotations, Jay. Here's Dr. Anthony Fauci. We all know he's as famous as the president right now. He's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And here he is in early March, sure. Just a couple of weeks ago. Quote, the flu has a mortality rate of 0.1%, 0.1%. This, meaning the coronavirus, has a mortality rate of 10 times that, close quote. Here's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya in his piece in the Wall Street Journal. Again, this is March 24th, just a couple of days ago. Quote, and you're talking about when you think the virus was first seeded in this country. Quote, an epidemic seed on January 1st implies that by March 9th, about 6 million people in the U.S. would have been infected. As of March 23rd, it's that Monday of this week, there were 499 COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. That's a mortality rate of 0.01%. In other words, a whole order of magnitude less than Dr. Fauci claimed just a couple of weeks earlier.
All right, we got to take a break. And, of course, when I reported that from the Stanford Institute professor of medicine at Stanford University, Mike Adams said, I don't know how to do math.
Night Show.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Matt Shea. He is a state representative in Washington State. Washington State was where this all began. If you recall, we had the nursing home there that had several people in the nursing home die. Actually, it was the hot spot in the nation for quite some time. I just talked about how you look at the statistics coming from the CDC. Even today, you see that the people that are over the expected life expectancy here in the United States account for about 35% of the reported coronavirus deaths. But now they're starting to change the definition of death. But I wanted to talk to Matt Shea about what's going on in Washington State. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Absolutely, David. Thanks for having me on again.
I want to talk about what's happening in terms of reopening first, because we've seen, you know, some state legislatures prodding along governors in Pennsylvania, for example. They wanted to reopen the state, and the governor said no. They went ahead and put it through. He vetoed that. I think they have overridden that veto. I think I've got that in my stack here somewhere. What is going on in Washington State? Is there a push to open up the state? Do they have a date yet?
Well, we are setting the date of May 1st, which a lot of folks associate May 1st with kind of a communist holiday, May Day.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But actually, it's something else. It's Rule of Law Day. It was put in by Dwight Eisenhower in 1958. We're supposed to celebrate the rule of law that day. So Perfect.
It's also something you scream when your plane is going spiraling down in a crash, right? And I think that's really what's happening to the entire country right now. It is May Day, May Day. Pull up, right?
It is. Really, pull up, pull up. Reopen the economy. You know, we love our neighbors, we love our businesses, and we really do need to reopen. We're asking our governor to reopen and stop the draconian and really unreasonable measures that are out there. Look, every governor in the United States doesn't have unlimited power. They have to be reasonable. They cannot be arbitrary and capricious. And when you're, for example, in Washington State, shutting down residential construction, and by nature, they're always 6 feet apart, it doesn't make any sense. Or in our state, they're shutting down hunting and fishing. They're shutting down our gun stores. These are the kind of things that we've been warning about for over a decade, David, and now we're seeing them come to fruition.
Yeah, you know, we have seen every time there is a shooting, and it is a tragedy. You know, you have a half dozen people killed or two dozen people killed. That's a tragedy. But they don't look at that in terms of the overall context of how many people have guns, how many people are not being killed on a regular basis. So there's no adjustment to population or the frequency of that happening. And instead, they want to take authoritarian measures to deny freedoms to everybody in the country when something like that happens to a small number of people. And now what we're seeing is totalitarianism, because now, by saying, well, we've got two people that died in one day here in Austin, they said, well, we got to lock everything down. Nobody's moving. Well, what's the context of that? We got millions of people here in this area, but they lock everything down because two people died. But this is now being applied not just to gun rights, but it's being applied to every one of our rights. And that is totalitarianism defined, because that's authoritarianism applied to the totality of life, you know, every aspect of life.
Yeah, and this is, they're presenting this as some sort of an either or proposition. Look, America can be open for business. Texas can be open for business. Washington State can be open for business. And we can be taking reasonable precautions for our health. You've got plenty of supplements on InfoWars, and a lot of us already have a healthy lifestyle anyway. So why do those two have to be mutually exclusive? They don't. That's the clear answer. Right now, what we're seeing, I think, is a testing of the system, a testing of the reaction of the people. Will they actually stand up and say enough is enough? And I think that at least in Washington State, we're reaching that point right now where it's been almost catastrophic on our economy to be completely shut down across the board. We have very few industries that are surviving. In fact, the one area of the economy that has not been hit very hard at all, according to our unemployment stats, is government. So I think that the solution is quite clear. Cut government by 50%, cut taxes across the board for all producers, so there's no exceptions or, you know, special favoritism. Cut it across the board. We will see the economy reignite and explode here in the next couple of months. We just got to get out of the way of the American people and that entrepreneurial spirit.
That's right. You know, I've said for a long time that government has become like a cancer, metastasizing. And of course, what a cancer does is it displaces the host's ability to be able to survive. And that's really what government has done. It really has become a cancer. It is such a burden. This parasite is such a burden on the people that it is literally killing them at this point. Right now, you know, we've got a situation. You've mentioned it. Other people have mentioned it. You know, we quarantine sick people. But now when you lock up people who are healthy, that's nothing but tyranny. But what do we do in this, as we see the plan now coming from the CDC and FEMA? It looks like they want another couple of weeks. We're right here at the middle of April. They're talking about a May 1st opening. The plan that was leaked by the Washington Post, that was put together by the CDC and FEMA, says, well, another 2 weeks of communicating to the public the dire circumstances of this, in other words, propaganda, and also manufacturing masks and protection and test kits. And then another 2 weeks they wanted to distribute those test kits and masks to everybody, and then say, all right, now you can come out. We're going to test you every time you travel, and you're going to be required to wear a mask. Do you think that's going to be allowed to happen in the in America?
Well, I do think that that's the direction they're absolutely headed right now. And look, I've watched the documentary. I understand the information that's come out that this may be linked directly to this Wuhan lab in China. This may have been a partially tested Chinese Communist Party bioweapon. I get all that, but the fact of the matter is, the numbers have not borne out. The models have not borne out. The science has not borne out. And the cure to all of this is not more tyranny. The cure to this is freedom. The cure to COVID-19, David, is freedom. And it's that simple. Here in Washington State, Article 1, Section 32 of our state constitution actually gives a duty to every citizen. And I'd like to read this to you, because a lot of constitutions around the country have a similar provision. a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles is essential to the security of individual right and the perpetuity of free government. We should recur to those fundamental principles. We do have a right to open our businesses, a right to go to church, a right to go to the gun store, a right to expect that prisoners are going to serve their full term, a right to assemble. You know, all of these things we do have a right to, and these exist actually outside of government. They're constitutionally protected. And I've heard a lot of my brethren around the country say constitutional rights. We don't have constitutional rights. We have constitutionally protected rights because these rights exist outside of government.
That's right. And if you have to get a permission slip to travel, to go to work, to go to school, to do anything, then they have taken away your fundamental rights and they now have now replaced them with government granted privileges. And that's what's so dangerous about all this. You know, Matt, you were talking about whether or not this is a bioweapon. I think it's very telling that the NIH is one of the biggest sponsors of biolabs and weapons here in the United States. They continued to fund bioweapon research and research that was criticized by ethicists. Even after they were told to stop funding it, they gave $3.7 million to China to do this type of research. Why isn't anybody talking about shutting that off? Nobody's talking about shutting down these bioweapon labs or the gain of research functions. This is something that's going to eventually bite us. But, you know, when we look at this, we shouldn't freak out about that and accept the chains, I think, because what we have done is we've already seen that this has not matched their projections, as you pointed out. But we have added another far more serious problem on top of that that makes it impossible for us to really address any kind of health issue if it were, in fact, as serious as they were saying.
That's exactly right. I mean, taxpayer money here in America is being used against this country. The communist Chinese have for a very long time been perpetrating fourth generation warfare against the United States, information warfare, political warfare, economic warfare. They're literally using our taxpayer money against us. So when we ask where the money's going to come from, cut off the funding to those types of programs and to the Chinese communists. That's a great
start. That's right. That's right. We got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Matt Shea. We'll talk about the political landscape here. What are the chances that we're going to be able to open up, and what does reopening the country actually look like? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Yeah, they are reading our minds. They have they've created these little communities, these little walled communities that we call social media. With that, they can determine whether or not you are buying their narrative, and they can adjust the propaganda. It is a master stroke, and we are seeing it applied in a way that we have never seen before. We're talking to Matt Shea. He is a representative of the state of Washington. And again, this is an election year. If you want to support Matt, go to VoteShea.com. That's VoteShea.com. Matt, first of all, we're going to talk about whether or not it's going to open up on May 1st or not. We'll talk about the 10th Amendment here, but do you think they're going to even have elections coming up this fall? What do you think is going to happen with this if they keep everybody locked down?
Well, certainly there are a lot of states right now, particularly socialist-controlled states, that are attempting to extend this into June and beyond. In fact, we're hearing this could go all the way through the election, and that they want people to be wearing masks at the voting booths. I mean, this is just, it's ridiculous at this point. And I think people are seeing through it very clearly. And I've been advocating very strongly that, you know, if your state doesn't reopen, then your county can certainly reopen, especially if the county commissioners, or your similar type of structure in your area and your county sheriff are standing together. They can reopen the economy in your county if need be. And I think that this is going to extend for a long time. I think that they want it to.
Yeah, I think as people are asking me, you know, what can we do? I said, I don't really think that we can. I think the federal government has gone too far. I don't think we can pull them back. It's got this entrenched bureaucracy. And I think as we're seeing now with these governors, it's looking like in many cases, like in your state, that we have gone too far to be able to pull that back at the state level even. It's really going to be at the local level. It's going to be having people like constitutional sheriffs that will stand up, like we're seeing many of them do in Michigan and so forth, or local officials that are going to be able to stand and lead against this. And that's why I think it's very important to have people like you in place at the various states, because it's going to have to be from the grassroots up. We cannot have a top-down solution. It's the top-down solutions that are killing us. It's the central planning that is killing us. And the institutions that at the top of the pyramid, and it shouldn't even be a pyramid if we follow the Constitution, but we do have a pyramid structure now, this hierarchical structure, and the ones at the top are the ones that have the most power and the ones that are the hardest to change. And while we're talking about the Constitution, we've had this back and forth about the 10th Amendment. Talk a little bit about that and what these governors are doing. You know, it's kind of strange to see these governors like Cuomo and Whitmer, who had been leading the most draconian shutdown measures at all, tried to get out in front of President Trump in terms of doing the reopening. And now after he started talking about it, they pulled back. I mean, we've got this. Do they really believe in the 10th Amendment, or is this just political posturing?
Well, I think it's political posturing. I think that they actually may try to run Cuomo for president because Biden's really a non-starter right now. I think they actually might try to run Cuomo for president, and some of the language that I'm hearing out there seems to indicate that that is indeed the direction that they're headed. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about these states, so people have been talking about the 10th Amendment, and David, we've been talking about the 10th Amendment for a very, very long time. The preamble to the Bill of Rights and the 10th Amendment make it very clear that the purpose of the 10th Amendment is to keep the federal government in check and to keep it from becoming out of control so that it infringes and impairs on our God-given unalienable rights. Well, Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution actually puts a check in place to prevent the states from banding together to do the exact same thing. And what we're seeing right now is effectively an unconstitutional compact between these states that has not been voted on, it's not been ratified by Congress, where they are attempting to continue this tyranny into perpetuity, and at least through June. And we can fight back against this. There is no jurisdiction and no authority for these states to do this kind of thing. And I think that that's what really vindicates what you just said. We need to focus locally. We need to go to the county level. And these counties across America, especially in rural areas that have no numbers at all or very little numbers, they should be reopening right now.
Yeah, it's not the first time we've seen the states come together in a pact to get around the Constitution, is it, Matt? You know, we've had the National Popular Vote Coalition, where they're trying to get around the Electoral College. You know, they want to tell us, well, Trump didn't really win the election. And then they say, well, actually he did, and we got to change the rules so that he doesn't do that again. That's what this is really about. They don't have the votes to amend the Constitution, so they want to go around it with the National Vote Compact. But now they're talking about locking down America and doing that in a compact. It's absolutely amazing.
It is amazing. And there was a book actually written about this that postulated this. It's called The Great State by Shelby Gallagher. And it's amazing to actually see this now coming to fruition, that these states, both on the West Coast and now surrounding Illinois and then also in the Northeast, are banding together to deprive and impair and infringe people's God-given unalienable rights. And we need to fight back against this. And the first way to do this, as we've been preaching for years, is to start at the local level, specifically the county, with the county commissioners, and with the county sheriff.
Yeah, and you understand that more than anybody because, I mean, you're in one of the most pro-government, you know, pro-progressive, I should say, areas, and that is in Washington State. And you're in a rural area where people want to have their freedom, but, you know, you're up against the population centers in Seattle and elsewhere where they are pushing through this kind of authoritarian control that has now become totalitarian. They've now extended that to, again, every aspect of our lives. You know, we're talking about the plan coming out from the CDC and from FEMA, you know, 2 weeks more of propaganda and then 2 weeks of distribution of millions of tests and, you know, protective equipment. Presumably we'll get our free government mask that we can wear around. And then they said at least another 180 days, but I don't think they're going to stop at 6 months. I mean, even as we're seeing their dire projections fail by anywhere as much as a factor of 40, they still keep ramping up on a daily basis. We see this even here in Texas. They keep ramping up their restrictions, and the restrictions are what's getting novel. It's not the coronavirus.
Yeah, 2 weeks more of re-education, comrade, and then we can reopen partially because we've granted you permission. I mean, think about that in America right now. That's the first point. The second point is this is actually weakening our country, and there are foreign countries right now that are looking at a weak America and trying to find areas that they could possibly attack us or exploit that weakness right now. We've seen a cyber attack already this last week against some of our critical infrastructure. So we need to get America reopened and restarted as soon as possible. Now, here in Washington State, Governor Inslee has implied that he is going to keep some of these things into perpetuity, that this is the new normal. And you know, not hunting and fishing, banning hunting and fishing. We can't go into the King's Forest. In fact, he had a press conference here recently yeah. where he was complaining because he was walking on a trail that he had shut down and somebody else was walking on that trail, and how dare they defy, you know, his order. And I thought, well, you know, excuse me, Your Majesty, you know, we're walking in the King's Forest now and that's illegal. That's not American. That's what Europe did. We broke away from that. We became independent because of that. We need to reclaim that independent spirit.
You know, Matt, I look at this, and we talked about the gun control issues. You know, hey, look, we had some people die. We're not going to, and so we're going to take away the rights of everybody. We've seen that with mandatory vaccines where they intrude themselves in the doctor-patient relationship. And, of course, we've seen that with the coronavirus outbreak where they say, well, you're not going to be allowed to have this kind of medication, but, you know, we're going to prepare vaccines and we're going to force you to take that kind of medication. And then we have seen the climate change issue where they've got a new model for society, one that is a model of austerity and central planning. All of these things have come together in this. And if we're not going to be allowed to determine what risk we're going to subject ourselves to, if we're not going to be allowed to have a privacy in a doctor-patient relationship or in a parent-child relationship, make decisions about that or even about our own lives, we don't have anything left in this country, do we?
Yeah, socialist technocrats always think they know better than we do how to live our lives, and they want to micromanage it. That's Agenda 2030, that it's this all-encompassing control over every area of our lives. And now we're seeing Americans begin to push back against that. And I think also it's important to understand that, you know, follow the money on some of this too. You have the same people with patents on some of these things, with patents on the cure, and the cure is always a virus, and now they're that there's going to be some sort of a, you know, an ID card to prove that you are innocent as far as you have been vaccinated, or they're going to have some sort of a mark or some sort of a tattoo. I mean, they're actually talking
internal about passports.
3 years That's ago, right. That conspiracy theory, quote unquote.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've been proven. It's now a conspiracy fact. They're out in the open. Thank you so much, Matt Shea. Again, you can find him at voteshea.com. Folks, you can find food. We were just talking about this earlier in the program. Go to InfoWarsStore.com. You can now sign up for storable food. We've got farmers who are saying, we've lost our ability to distribute and to sell to our customers. It doesn't make any sense for us to even grow food anymore. Get food while you still can. You can also get vitamin D3.
Defending the American dream. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I just want to put in some closing comments here on the CDC statistics, and then we're going to be talking coming up in the next hour. We're going to be talking to Richard Proctor. You know, I've had a hashtag that has been trending for a while on Twitter. Hashtag Constitution distancing. You know, we're told we got a social distance. You have to understand what is really being distanced. They are removing the Constitution. Any understanding of it, your ability to hear anything about it, that is being removed so far away that you cannot see it. But now, you know, we've got the articles from CNN. We've got social distance deniers are now coming out. And they are ramping people up to be little snitches and Stasi reporters. People getting attacked, in some cases verbally, in some cases physically. You had the guy in Florida who threatened to shoot people because they weren't wearing a mask. You saw Candace Owens was confronted by the police at Whole Foods because she was not wearing a mask, and on and on. But the reality of this, as we're looking at it, talking about the fact that it's coronavirus patients over the age of 80 who have a death rate of 15%. And even that is not accurate. Because as I pointed out, you know, we have, if you're over 80 in the U.S., you are beyond your natural life expectancy. 78 is what the life expectancy here is in the United States. It's a bit less than it is in Europe. And so they're saying, well, we have a study of more than 44,000 coronavirus patients. It showed that about 15% of the patients older than 80 have died. Patients in their 50s had a death rate that was three times higher than the death rate for patients in their 40s. So it seems to be tied to age. It also seems to be tied to other conditions. Coronavirus patients with heart disease, for instance, had about a 10% death rate. Those with diabetes had about a 7% death rate. Now, if you're dying from the heart disease now, we've had a dramatic drop-off in the number one killer in the United States. You know, before the CDC started cooking the books on coronavirus statistics, the number one killer in the United States was by far heart disease. We had about 650,000 people a year typically die from heart disease. But somehow, during the coronavirus, that has taken a plunge. And so have deaths from flu. So have deaths from pneumonia. And in place of those deaths, we now have coronavirus deaths. So if you really do believe the CDC propaganda that the coronavirus is the number one killer in the United States, you don't really understand how they are playing with the numbers. Not at all. Not at all. You know, we look at this CNN story, for example. Tip leads to 17 bodies at a New Jersey nursing home. Now, that's bad. Okay, they're storing up the bodies because so many people are dying in the nursing home. But let me repeat, in a nursing home. Elderly people are in a nursing home because they're so sick they can't care for themselves. They already have one foot in the grave and another one on a banana peel. And the coronavirus may have come along and given them a shove. But, folks, that is where we're all going to wind up someday. And when we look at this, here's the bottom line on this CNN freakout story. 17 people died, and they're all stashed in a nursing home. Everybody's dying, right? Well, no, actually. The last sentence and the CNN story, which they hope you don't read. They want you to just look at the headline. With 2,543 licensed beds, this is one of the biggest facilities in the state. The facility was rated, quote, much below average by Medicare in a March health inspection and received five health citations. So let's put that in perspective. They got 2,543 beds. That means they had 17 deaths here. That is 0.9% of the people who died. And one of the places that has received five health citations this last month, one that is much below average. But, everybody's dying from coronavirus. No context at all. No context to the CDC and the CNN lies. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, I was just talking about the nursing home. They said we found 17 bodies that were stashed in this nursing home. And if you look at that headline, and if you take that out of context, that looks frightening. It looks like, wow, so many people are dying, they can't even get them out of there. Well, this is a nursing home that has been cited for multiple health violations just this last month in March. It is one of the biggest facilities in New Jersey, and it is much below average. In other words, it's about as messed up as you can get. That's why when people die, they just stash them in the back. And so somebody called. And now this is being used by CNN to hype a pandemic panic. But even CNN at the very bottom of the article, hoping that you don't read that, says, this is a very bad facility. It's got its own problems. And that's what we're seeing on a case-by-case basis. You know, the largest U.S. study of COVID-19 admissions reveals the single biggest factor in hospitalization. Here's a shocker. People in poor health, the aged, the obese, are much more likely to come down with a severe case of COVID-19. Imagine that. Obesity and age, the largest factors in whether or not a person has to be admitted to the hospital. Because, you know, if you're in poor health, if you have heart disease, diabetes, other things like that, you're going to get hit very hard with the flu or with coronavirus or with pneumonia. It's going to be very challenging, isn't it? And as we pointed out in the past, the Montana physician, Dr. Bukacek, I think is the way you pronounce her name, she said, more often than we want to admit, we don't know with certainty the cause of death when we fill out death certificates. Autopsies are rarely performed. Even when an autopsy is done, the actual cause of death is not always clear. So even before we heard of COVID-19, death certificates were based on assumptions and educated guesses that go unquestioned. The CDC has now updated as of April the 4th. They still state that the mortality, quote-unquote, data includes both confirmed and presumptive positive cases of COVID-19. In other words, people who have not even tested. So they're not necessarily dying from it. They're not necessarily even dying with it. They're just assuming that that is the case. And as we see another headline from the Washington Times, U.S. ducks coronavirus doomsday as the projections miss the mark. But I say New York, which just weeks ago was pleading with the feds to help it find 40,000 ventilators, now says that things are going so well that they are shipping hundreds of ventilators to other states. When they're shipping hundreds of ventilators to other states, remember Cuomo said, hey, I got 400 from the feds. I need 30,000. What's the matter with you? Trump, we're all going to die. I need 30,000 ventilators. You only sent me 400? I can't do anything with that. Well, what he did with them was he put them in storage because people said, where did they go? And now we see they're shipping hundreds of them to other states. And you understand the financial incentive for the hospitals to diagnose people with COVID-19, maybe not even with a test. And now they're coming back and they're saying, you know, we're getting a lot of negative tests on COVID-19, and I think that those are false negatives. So we have to assume that even if we give them the test and it says no, we got to assume they still got it. Why would they make that assumption? Well, because the government is paying them $13,000 to make that assumption. You can also get a false positive, which is now going to be putting you in a database to be tracked and locked down unless you take a vaccine, unless you wear a mask, but they may not even let you out if you wear a mask. A false positive is basically identifying you as a suspected infected and locking you up. But again, it's not just, when we're talking about ventilators, it's not just the $13,000 for diagnosing somebody with COVID. If you can put them on a ventilator, then you get another $39,000, and the ventilators only cost $50,000. So with just one patient, COVID-19 diagnosed, whether or not you tested them or not, whether or not they failed the test or not, you diagnose them with COVID-19, you report it to the federal government, you put them on a ventilator, you got $52,000, you pay for your ventilator. And then you can charge that person every single day. Good business, right? Hospital beds nationwide were projected to top out at nearly 225,000, but of course they have missed that projection by anywhere from a factor of 2 to a factor of 10 on a state-by-state basis. Pessimists say there was never enough understanding of the disease. Prognosticators and policymakers were operating in the dark, guessing as to what was going to happen, using imperfect data to make decisions that could turn out to have been completely wrong. And again, what we have seen over decades of following climate change, again, it was a thin veneer, an excuse to impose full-on Marxism and austerity, communism. And they've done the same thing with this. They have imposed communism on us, folks, taking away people's ability to work, taking away our jobs, our businesses, putting us on not only welfare, but just a guaranteed income, and everybody gets the same income. Is that not communism by definition? Where everything that we do has to be given to us, authorized as a privilege by the state, and we're all given the same amount of barely subsistent income? That is communism. We have been pushed into communism. And let's not put any fine point on it. President Trump is pushing the cart. He is the president. You remember when Harry Truman had that sign on his desk, said, the buck stops here? Well, it does, President Trump. The buck stops with you. And you're responsible for this. You're responsible for putting Fauci out there. You're responsible for leaving him there. You're responsible for letting him do this to people. and letting FEMA do this to people. Are you complicit in this as well? Let's go back to some of the statements from these other people. Again, you know, when I questioned the estimations that have been done for a long time on flu, I didn't believe the numbers when they had them out on flu, but they conveniently found a way to make the estimated flu numbers make it look like the fatality rate was 10 times higher than the coronavirus. But it's not my research. It's the research of a professor of medicine at Stanford University, a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research, and he had this to say about how they inflated these fatality rates. Let's go back and pick up the rest of video clip number 8.
Here's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya in his piece in the Wall Street Journal. Again, this is March 24th, just a couple of days ago. Quote, and you're talking about when you think the virus was first seeded in this country. Quote, an epidemic seed on January 1st implies that by March 9th, about 6 million people in the U.S. would have been infected. As of March 23rd, it's that Monday of this week, there were 499 COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. That's a mortality rate of 0.01%. In other words, a whole order of magnitude less than Dr. Fauci claimed just a couple of weeks earlier.
I think the thing is, nobody knows the number. The numbers we've seen are consistent with a very, very wide range from an epidemic that will kill 2 to 4 million people on one end and an epidemic that will kill 50,000 to 100,000 people on the other. That's an incredibly broad range. And the policies you do to avoid 2 to 4 million deaths are very, very different than the policies you do to avoid, you know, 50,000 to 100,000 deaths.
Yeah. So how do we know what's happening? Well, we've had a lot of citizen journalists who've gone around the hospitals and said, well, it doesn't look all that busy here. We've had hospitals that have laid off 500 staff because we're not allowed to do any elective surgery. And some of that includes heart surgery. That's elective for some people. And so you've got empty hospitals. And yet in New York, we see these headlines. New York City's intensive care units are still, quote, dangerously overcrowded. Let me tell you something. That headline has been there since 2017. Dangerously overcrowded New York City hospitals have nothing to do with the coronavirus. In 2017, I've read you the headlines, people saying it's a war zone. We've got beds in the hallways. We don't have sufficient beds. We have no personal protective equipment for the nurses. As a matter of fact, the nurses and the staff are threatening to walk out. Folks, this is not news to say that we have dangerously overcrowded New York City hospitals. It's not news to say that hundreds of people are dying in New York City. It's just news that's being used in a new way for their agenda. We'll be right back. Stay with us. As I said, this coronavirus thing has been used to enact the communist central planned agenda of austerity and the same income for everybody, you know, universal basic income. They take our jobs one way or the other. They don't have to, the technocrats don't have to be the bad guys now. It's the coronavirus that did it to you. It's not President Trump who did it to you. It's not Fauci who did it to you. It's not Schumer or McConnell. Or any of these politicians who did, it's the coronavirus. You didn't lose your job and your business and your freedom and your life because of, you know, Elon Musk or because of Bill Gates or Amazon, any of these other people, Jeff Bezos. You didn't lose it because of them. It was the coronavirus. So don't be mad at them. You know, like Bloomberg said, we got to figure out a way they don't bring the guillotines out because we're working on a way to take everybody's jobs and replace them, because we're the smart people. You know, these people are just rubes. They used to be farmers during the Industrial Revolution. Farmers don't know anything. Anybody can do that. And then, you know, we had, the farmers got replaced by the people who were building stuff and factories and stuff in the Industrial Revolution. But, and they were rubes too, you know, said Bloomberg. But he said, we're the smart people in the room. We're writing software. Artificial intelligence is going to take everybody's jobs. And we got to figure out how we're going to keep them from bringing the guillotines out to us. That's the term he used, guillotines. That's Bloomberg's term. Well, now they've got it. They're going to keep you on universal basic income. And Bloomberg didn't take your job. None of these technocratic billionaires took your job, even though that's what they've been talking about doing and working on doing. They're going to lock you into your little digital gulag, your little digital cell, where, again, you know, don't even have a pet because you could get sick from touching that dog. No creature comforts. You're just going to be by yourself. But you will be connected to other people, kind of, you know, through your conferencing, Zoom conferencing, or Facebook social media, you know, all the different formats where they can watch and monitor everything that you do. Yeah, there you go. You can have a little robot pet dog. Yeah, good job, guys. Yeah, that's what we want. We want robot dogs and robot wives and husbands, and we want to have all of our social needs met by social media that is controlled by Facebook and Twitter and Google. So now we got millions of people waiting for virus relief checks. And as the Hill points out, it is a major test for the IRS. They're not used to giving people money. It's pretty hard to get the IRS to give up any of that cash. They're just not geared for that. And we've got a clip where Steve Mnuchin was being interviewed. And listen to this. Listen to this clip. Because as people are waiting for their little government cheese check of $1,200, Mnuchin thinks, yeah, that's going to last people for 10 weeks. 10 weeks. Let's play the clip, video clip number three.
These checks in the mail are direct deposit. It's really bridge liquidity for people as they go through these difficult times.
Bridge liquidity for about 8 weeks?
Well, I think the entire package provides economic relief overall for about 10 weeks.
Oh, there you go. That's all we need, right? Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Yeah, as a person at Goldman Sachs, you know that the rest of us don't really need any more than about $6,000 a year. That's what it works out to. You know, you take $1,200 every 10 weeks, a little government cheese check. Well, you know, a 50-week work year. Well, that works out to about $6,000. That's all we need, isn't it, Steve? We don't need any more than $6,000. We can all live on that. We can all live on, you know, $1,200 for 10 weeks. Thank you. Thank you. Goldman Sachs banker. Now, let me give you an example of what this looks like, though. Here's a story out of Florida. Danielle Rivera worries about impending homelessness after her husband, Jonathan Rivera, lost his job. You got another individual, David Ellis, who worked 60-hour weeks providing corporate audiovisual services to events at hotels from South Beach to Aventura as the coronavirus pandemic spread. Of course, nobody wanted any corporate events. So he was laid off March 5th as hotels closed like dominoes. He quickly let his landlord know that he might be unable to pay April's rent. But in the month that's followed, Ellis has been unable to file and receive unemployment benefits because of Florida's broken system. As if living a hard luck country music song, the out-of-state developer of his building, which has benefited from huge federal tax breaks for low-income housing, had an envelope slipped into a groove of his door days before Easter weekend, saying that the landlord demands payment of the rent or possession of the premises within 3 days. Failure to pay by April the 13th could lead to an eviction proceeding, it warned. Now, what do we do? Do we say to the landlord, you can't kick them out? Well, then what does that do to the landlord? Okay, the building owner. He can't pay his mortgage then, right? So then, what do we do about that? Well, it might be that the people at Goldman Sachs who work with Steve Mnuchin might have a solution for that. They just foreclose on the building and wind up owning it. I don't know where this all ends. Where, you know, you're passing the buck of responsibility, President Trump. Where does the buck of this depression that you have created, shutting down people's livelihoods everywhere, where does that end? Does that end with everybody being owned by the Goldman Sachs bankers that filled your cabinet? Is that what this is about? Sure looks like it to me. The government's big program to save small businesses has just run out of money. That's right. And so everybody's looking about how are we going to get any more money in here? People are very upset. We got some other politicians. You know, we have the new majority leader, Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader of the GOP, who is attacking Nancy Pelosi, his counterpart. A lot of people have attacked her because she was showing off her freezer that was packed with ice cream, saying, I don't know how I would have done this if ice cream had not been invented. Oh, yeah, okay. She's going to fight you on the crumbs over the tax cuts that you got. And, yeah, most of the tax cuts went to the people like Steve Mnuchin. But, look, I'm grateful for any kind of tax cut that anybody gets, especially the ones that are given to me. So, look, I know that Nancy Pelosi would fight me for the crumbs. When we look at this whole thing about ice cream, kind of sounds like Marie Antoinette, though, doesn't it? Except that Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake. I guess Nancy Pelosi, instead of cake, she's got ice cream. But let's take a look at what Kevin McCarthy had to say about this. He's upset, he says, because Nancy Pelosi is holding up paychecks for millions of Americans. Do you like the idea that this welfare check is called a paycheck? That's what the Republicans are selling you. Let's play that clip, video clip number two.
We have more than $308 billion that has now been sent out to the small businesses. More than 1.4 million small businesses through almost 5,000 banks. But you know what? That money will run out come Thursday, tomorrow, or Friday. But Nancy Pelosi is holding up approval of more money.
All right, we're going to go to break. Yes, Nancy Pelosi's
afloat,
fault that you can't get enough government welfare checks. No, it's Republicans who are now demanding that you get your welfare check. And let me tell you, those small business checks, even if you get one, it's going to be just as irrelevant as the $1,200 for 10 weeks that they give to individuals. Yeah, both parties are pushing the destruction of the middle class and communism.
It's your move. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Yeah, the goal has always been for us to capture all we want. You know, to pursue life, liberty, you know, have life and liberty, and to pursue happiness, right? But now they have checkmated us, it looks like, and they have surrounded us with ourselves. We're so concerned about our self-interest. They have us so frightened that most Americans are backed in the corner. The rest of us are being threatened. We're going to be talking to Richard Proctor in this segment and for the rest of the show, actually. Before we go to Richard, however, I want to remind you of the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. You know, I was talking about the dire straits, even in Idaho, where you got potato farmers who can't sell potatoes. And he's got people who are coming. He had millions of potatoes that he's just giving away because he said, I can either feed them to animals or I can give them to humans and plow them under or whatever. And he had somebody drive 8 hours to get free potatoes. Welcome to the new Greater Depression, folks. Yeah. And the problem is that this potato farmer in Idaho and his family has run this potato farm for 133 years. He said, well, I'm not planting potatoes this year. See, this is how destroying the free market system that none of these people appreciate because they want to be in charge and run this. Do you think that they're going to starve? No, they've got their underground bunkers. They've got their storehouses. And if they run out, they feel free to use their arms to come steal it from you. We had the New Jersey governor saying that last week. And so they're going to take from you even if they don't have theirs because they've always done this, folks. We are coming up into some really hard times, and so far there is no light at the end of the tunnel because we still have President Trump doing exactly what Fauci and the CDC and FEMA are telling him to do. He's following their plan. I don't trust their plan. I don't trust the plan that is being enacted right now. You better wake up and take a look at what's going on. You better plan for your future here. Now, we put storable food back on the website. There's going to be a little bit of a wait. But you don't want to make sure that you are not locked out of the grocery stores if you don't have your immunity passport or your mask or whatever. And there may not be anything on the shelves, because understand that is another one of the hallmarks of communism that we have now imposed, had imposed on us in just a matter of a few days. They're ramping us into communism step by step, and those steps are coming in increments of every couple of days. So take a look at the products we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Again, those are storable food products. You can keep them for 25 years because, understand, if we pull out of this, and I hope we do, they have established a precedent where they will do this again, and it will be worse every time they do this. So this storable food will last for 25 years. It's made in America. It's non-GMO. Even after you open it, you can reseal it and use it within a couple of days. We also have, if you're concerned about your health, and you should be concerned about your health all the time, we have D3, our vitamin D3, which is winter sun. That is now 50% off. That helps. It doesn't fight any viruses directly, but it helps your immune system to work properly. And I read for you yesterday many op-ed pieces from the CDC and NIH scientists who are saying, we noticed that this helps to stop cytokine storms that happen with viruses and so forth. It helps to order the immune system. We know that we've seen this with people who have autoimmune disease, that it's typically accompanied with a deficiency of vitamin D, and that when we supplement it, the conditions typically get better. We now have Winter Sun back in stock, vitamin D3, 50% off. We also have Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. You can get your daily minimum recommendation of zinc, as well as many other vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. You can get it in a very easy-to-take liquid format. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off all those products at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, let's go to Richard Proctor now, and we've had Richard on a regular basis talking about economics, talking about the Constitution. You can find his books on the Constitution and economics at bathroomeconomics.com. He's got a book, a detailed commentary on the Constitution, Saving the Constitution, line by line explanation about it and putting it in the historical context of why they wrote that there. There's also, now that everybody, all the schools have been shut down, now is a perfect opportunity for you to teach your kids about the Constitution. A Constitution, if we can keep it, is targeted towards your children and a great way for you to learn as you teach them. That's one of the things I loved about homeschooling, is being able to learn things that I didn't want to learn because they were forcing me to do it when I was in school. So you can find all those products at bathroomeconomics.com. Thank you for joining us, Richard.
Well, good to be here. Good to be here. First time I've been able to come in on visual, so I'm glad to do that.
Yeah, it's good to see you live instead of just a still picture there.
Yeah, I'll scare everybody, but I'm still here.
Okay, let's talk about what really sticks out to you, because, you know, I've been tweeting about this, and most of my tweets are really about the Constitution being shut down, and I have been tweeting hashtag Constitution distancing, because that's really what's happening. It's not social distancing. Yeah, that's a big part of it. They want to isolate each and every one of us, but it's also about distancing us from the Constitution. What do you see as the biggest single attack that sticks out to you on this constitutional issue?
Okay, I've heard about some guys in California. I don't remember the city. Not important. The guys are there. Seven of them standing on the corner. All of a sudden, three patrol cars show up with lights flashing, all that kind of stuff. And they cite these people with $1,000 fines because they're out there standing on the porch, on the pavement together. They're not doing anything. They're standing there. Okay, now what have we got here? We have a punishment without trial. They're just punishing them because they showed up. Punishment without trial. Folks, that's completely against the Constitution. Amendment 7, suits of common law. That's what we do. We're common law. Where the value in the controversial exceed $20, there's no value here at all. People standing around. The right to a trial by jury shall be preserved. It was not. So the entire Seventh Amendment is gone. Entire thing. Now, what's going to happen next? Those people are going to show up at a trial. The trial is going to be a common law. It's going to be a maritime trial, not a common law trial. It'll be a judge sitting there looking at you saying, well, you're guilty. You did this and you're guilty. Sorry about that phone in the background. It's way far away.
That's all right.
Anyway, so here you are. Here you are in a trial called, it is a maritime call. A maritime law trial, but they're considering it as if you're guilty of a common law trial. It isn't. It's maritime law. What is maritime law? It's law that belongs on the high seas. Admiralty law. It belongs on the high seas. It's not, it does not belong in Iowa. It does not belong in San Francisco. It does not belong in any court of the land. Only courts of high seas. Things that, captains do on ships. That's what admiralty law is. So the captain has full authority to do whatever he wants. And that's what the judges are doing. Whatever they want. Without trial by jury. Without any loss. Without anything. We must stand up for our rights. But if you do get a trial by jury, you're lucky enough, you need to remember that the jury needs to know. And you may have to tell them that their responsibility, their first responsibility, is to ensure that the law is constitutional. That's the jury's responsibility. I bring that in my books, bring that out in my Saving the Constitution discussion in the second appendix where it talks about maritime and admiralty law. The first thing a jury is supposed to do is see if the law is constitutional. If they decide the law is constitutional, then they have to decide whether or not there were $20 lost, $20 injury. If there was no $20 injury, then there's no case. If they do decide it's a $20 injury, then you got to have them show you how. Anyway, folks, that's what we're faced with. If they're going to stop you on the street because you're walking, they're going to cite you, they're going to fine you. All of those things are all going to be taken to a maritime court, which is all unconstitutional. We've got to stand by our Constitution.
That's
now,
right.
I don't know how
That's
the
right.
judges are going to act, but I know what they should do.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that when we come back. I want to get into that and compare that to civil asset forfeiture and so forth. $1,000 seems to be the standard. There, everywhere I look, is $1,000 and or 6 months in jail. This is what they're telling you if you defy their orders. We'll be right back with Richard Proctor. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Richard Proctor, bathroomeconomics.com, and this is very important for you to understand, folks, because when the government comes after you, you want to make sure that you've got a trial, a fair trial. And, of course, there's a lot of things involved in this. As we see in the news about Roger Stone, there's now a 120-page ruling that's been put out by Judge, and I put Judge in air quotes here, quote-unquote Judge Amy Berman Jackson, saying that Roger Stone doesn't get a new trial. She's ignoring the fact that the jury forewoman was tainted, severely tainted, and biased and prejudiced. There should be criminal charges brought against her. Instead, the judge is going to just completely ignore that, and will probably get away with it because everything is the news cycle has been taken over by what is happening with the coronavirus. So even if you do get a trial, judges can shut down the reality of a jury trial. But Richard Proctor was just talking about what is happening across the country. Every one of these rules, and again, the rules are going up on a daily basis. In some areas, you know, you can't be out in public. People are being approached on the beach who are by themselves. We've seen in some jurisdictions, you can only walk down one side of the street. You know, all traffic going one way goes down that side of the street. The other traffic going this way goes down this side of the street. As I said, when I looked at all this stuff, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to tell us we got to hop on one leg next because every day it's more, right? It's more rules about this. And if you violate their rules, the standard procedure seems to be a $1,000 fine and or 6 months in jail. And I already reported this week, Richard, that in Canada, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police have said if you violate our rules to say shut down, we'll give you $750,000 fine. And if we rule that you being out caused somebody to get infected, that will be $1 million. I mean, this I was so out of it. I couldn't believe it. The person that wrote the article had a link to the official website of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police or would not have believed that. It's so out of control. But Richard, you were talking about maritime law. And I have talked over and over again about how the bureaucracies have taken control of our lives. You know, we fought the American Revolution because we had taxation without representation. But I've said we not only have taxation without representation, but these people are writing are laws for us that we live under. Now, they call them rules. They call them regulations. So now we have regulation and taxation without representation because they assess how much we have to pay them in terms of fees. If we violate their rules, they give us fines, and then there is no due process, which is what you were talking about. And as we look at what the bureaucracies have been doing to us, whether it is family court and CPS taking our children without even telling us what the supposed violations are, what they allege that we have done, and then we have to sue them in court, or under the war on drugs, they take your property, your car, your cash, your home, your plane, whatever, and they charge that inanimate object with a crime, and then you got to sue them. Now, this is the same kind of bureaucratic tyranny that is being rolled out to enforce these arbitrary rules from every pettifogging bureaucrat from the top to the bottom. And this is all really maritime law. And let's talk about how we fight maritime law. First, we have to understand what it is. So define this for the listeners.
Okay, well, maritime law came about in the colonial days because captains or whatever would violate whatever, and people would then take the court, and that would be the Supreme Court now, because the Supreme Court's original jurisdiction is maritime law. And if you violate those items, the captain has full right to do whatever he wants. People would take the captain to trial. That's a maritime trial, and that's a Supreme Court trial. That's where they start. That's what should only place they should be. Once you've got a maritime law in a regular court, then you and I will look at a judge who will act like she's a captain of the ship or he's the captain of the ship. He'll act like that and throw you in jail without any process at all. That person becomes the prosecutor, the arrestor, the officer, the prosecutor. There's no defense. That's gone. The judge, the jury, everything. And we'll decide, yes, you're guilty. That's maritime law, folks. And it doesn't need a gold flag in the corner to be that, a gold-rimmed flag to be that. Gold-rimmed flag is just a decoration. A maritime court is a court where the jury, where there is no jury, where the judge by himself decides you're guilty and you have no recourse, period. And they throw you in the brig. That's a captain's prerogative. That's not a judge's prerogative.
And, you know, Richard, we just had President Trump talking about how, hey, I've got total authority, and my favorite movie is Mutiny on the Bounty. And yeah, these governors, maybe somebody sat him down and gave him a lecture on what is really happening, the fact that our government has been taken over by bureaucrats who are operating under maritime law, and we can do anything that we want. Nobody can stop us, right?
Yes, I don't know. That's right, but even President Trump can't go beyond the Constitution. I'm sorry. And the Constitution is very clear. These kinds of things are very clear. We say the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, effects. Okay, that doesn't just mean that's private property, folks. That's every bit of it. And that's the Fourth Amendment. Then the Seventh Amendment goes on to say suits at common law. And if suits at common law have to have a value of $20, and the right to trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any other court than according to the rules of common law. Common law is our law, not maritime law. Maritime law is for the oceans and the seas. The captain has that good, fine and good, but the guy in Iowa doesn't have that law. So you've got that kind of a thing, you mean to demand a jury trial. Now, I want to mention one more thing. We talk a lot about saving the Constitution. Let's see if I can get that up there. Yes, I can, just barely. I have a terrible time with these books and these things. Anyway, I also have another set, which we haven't talked about very much. I'm going to try to get that. No, the other. Give me back to my picture again. Get that thing off the screen.
Hold it back closer to your face. It'll be in focus. Closer to
All
you.
All right. Here we go. There we go. Right, thank you very much. Liberty will survive. Now, this is volume one. I have six volumes. This set took me 55 years to write. Okay? Now, I didn't write it all that time, but I was learning it all that time. Mm-hmm. And it's the background of all the stuff that's going on today that you're seeing foisted upon us. And this explains the saving the Constitution explains it in detail step by step about the Constitution itself. The Liberty series tells the story of how it happened to us. And that book's available. Those books are also available in Bathroom Economics. Everything.
Well, I hope you don't have to write a tyranny series where you talk about how we descended into slavery and tyranny. But, you know, really what you're talking about here and the idea that this is maritime law as the captain of the ship, this is what people should really be talking about, isn't it, Richard? They got upset with President Trump because he incorrectly said, as president, I have total authority. This is a mutiny. I'm going to do this. And yet that is reality of what has really happened to our government, the federal government, as well as the state governments. You've got all of these bureaucratic departments that are acting as if we are on a ship and they are the captains and they will order us and we will have no due process. We'll have no trial by jury. We'll have no presumption of innocence. They'll just keelhaul us over the on the back of the ship.
And that's exactly what they are doing. No matter what we want to call it, that's exactly what they're doing. Punishment without trial. When they seize anything, money, property, anything, it's without, if you're not a criminal, if it hasn't been in trial, there's no constitutional basis. We are losing our thing because we, the people, don't know what it says. We don't know what the Constitution is. We don't understand it. I have tried to help people in a simple to read book called Saving the Constitution to at least understand what it says. If you want background, that's where the Liberty series comes into effect. Because that gives you all the background. Again, written, simple to read. But it tells you why we're where we are and who's done it to us by name. I didn't hide any names. They're all there. Folks, we're in a world of hurt. We've got
trial by jury, Richard. You know, we talk about FIJA, you know, Fully Informed Jury Association. They try to get people to understand that juries need to think independently. As you're pointing out, they need to look at the actual law. You know, is this a real law, first of all? And then secondly, they have the authority to not obey that law if they disagree with it. That's another thing that the juries have. These are things that have been put together over the centuries. You know, when I see them, it's not just people standing on the corner. Oh, this last Easter holiday, we had police in various jurisdictions coming after people who were meeting and staying in their cars with the windows rolled up and saying, yeah, we're going to get your license plate. We're going to give you fines of $500 per person in the car, not per car, but per person in the car. We've got to understand what our rights are. It's not just juries that need to be informed. All of us need to be informed. Thank you so much, Richard, bathroomeconomics.com. And that's it for today, folks. Know your rights because they're being taken away from you out of ignorance.